Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Governor Kathy Hochul says Democratic leaders in the state are exploring their redistricting options in response to the GOP's efforts to gerrymander in Texas. But while Hochul appears ready to march forward, some of New York's congresspeople are more hesitant. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King.
Democrats in the Texas House left the state this week to prevent Republicans there from voting on a new congressional map that would likely give the GOP five more seats in the House in 2026. The battle has sparked threats of arrest from Texas Governor Greg Abbott and threats of retaliation from blue states like New York. At a press conference on Monday, Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul said she was ready to, quote, fight fire with fire and pursue early redistricting in New York to improve Democrats' odds there.
I'm tired of fighting this fight with my hand tied behind my back, with all due respect to the good government groups. Politics is a political process.
New York and Texas aren't the only states battling over congressional district maps ahead of next year's midterms. Missouri, Ohio, Florida, Indiana, California, and Maryland are all at least considering it. The 2026 elections will determine which party controls the House. If Democrats flip it, President Trump will face much more opposition in Congress as he tries to push through his agenda. While Hochul says Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie and Senate Leader Andrea Stork-Cousins are both on board, New York's congresspeople appear reluctant to join in. Republican Congressman Mike Lawler criticized gerrymandering across the board in an interview with CNN's Jake Tapper Tuesday night. He says he plans to introduce legislation in Congress that would ban it.
I think it's wrong what Texas is doing. I don't support it. I think it is wrong what has happened in Illinois or New Jersey, for instance, which has a quote-unquote independent redistricting commission, where the tie-breaking vote made this declarative statement. Republicans got to draw the map last time, so I'm going to give it to the Democrats, even though it meant resulting in three Republicans getting elected. We have to actually have neutral districts across this country. It would serve the country better.
Congressman Paul Tonko, a Democrat from the 20th District, says the House already passed a voting law in 2021 called H.R. 1 or the For the People Act that would have required states to use independent redistricting commissions to draw congressional maps. It languished in the Senate.
Here, they're not only ignoring that, all of the Republicans voted against that concept, but they're also further denying the law as it exists today by doing some of the racially motivated silencing of voters.
Texas Democrats have noted that the five districts most heavily impacted by the proposed gerrymander are compromised heavily of voters of color. Like Hochul, Tonko met with six of the Texas Democrats this week and praised their decision to break quorum. But he refrained from endorsing Hochul's call to, quote, fight fire with fire with early redistricting in New York, nor did he call it hypocritical when asked by WAMC. He says it's time for Congress to step in.
What we're saying is that we believe in H.R. 1, an independent commission for all of the states in the country so that we're all playing under the same rules.
If Hochul moves forward with redistricting, she faces significant legal hurdles. The New York Constitution was amended to have the Independent Redistricting Commission draw maps once a decade in line with the U.S. Census. Changing that would require two consecutive state legislative sessions to pass an amendment, which would then need to be approved by voters. The earliest that could happen is 2027. Rachel Fuss, a senior policy advisor for the government watchdog Reinvent Albany, notes an amendment was already introduced last month. It would allow the state legislature to bypass the Independent Redistricting Commission and redraw maps mid-decade whenever another state does so. Still, she says fighting fire with fire is a, quote, race to the bottom.
We're talking about people's enfranchisement. We're talking about democratic principles and people's rights. If the goal is to work for the voters of New York State, gerrymandering is never going to be the solution.
Hastie, a Democrat, described the idea Monday as a way to deter bullies and that he, quote, hopes not to have to use any law that would change New York's redistricting rules. If the response by Congress is to take action on gerrymandering across the board, then he may just get his way.
Sometimes the best way to get a bully to stop being a bully is to remind them that they could also be bullied.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
Legislation to ban the use of masks by ICE agents is being pushed by a multi-state coalition of state legislators, including New York's own Senator Pat Fahey. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
Tuesday, at a national conference of state legislators in Boston, Democratic New York Senator Pat Fahey of the 46th District joined colleagues from Pennsylvania and New York condemning the use of paramilitary tactics by ICE agents. In mid-July, Fahey introduced MELT, the Mandating End of Lawless Tactics Act, previously introduced in the state assembly by Tony Simone of the 75th District. MELT would ban the use of face coverings and plain clothes by ICE and other federal enforcement agents during civilian immigration actions conducted in New York State. Fahey dubbed the agents masked militia.
Masked agents who show up in unmarked vehicles, paramilitary-type gear, unmarked, and then with face and head coverings. It goes against decades of work where the rule of law has prevailed and we have made decades of gains on transparency and accountability. What alarmed me even more when I decided to introduce the bill was seeing that we were going to see an escalation in these types of tactics because over $75 billion was allocated to ICE and incarceration funding through ICE efforts in the Big Beautiful Bill, or what I refer to as the Big Beautiful Betrayal.
Fahey says masked men scooping people off city streets undermines law enforcement at all levels and echoes authoritarian regimes, not the United States of America. She notes that 21 attorneys general, led by Tish James in New York, have signed a letter to Congress highly critical of masked militia-type paramilitary tactics used by ICE. Fahey calls into question transparency and accountability about ICE, and also about the fate of so-called sanctuary cities under the Trump administration. A Justice Department release on Tuesday identified New York as a sanctuary jurisdiction and listed Rochester and New York City as sanctuary cities. Albany did not appear on the list.
It's unbelievable the erraticness and outrageousness of the bullying tactics from the administration, but we have seen where the Supreme Court has previously affirmed lower court rulings that upheld California's sanctuary state policies and have declined to hear other cases related to immigration enforcement and sanctuary cities. So, but even the court has acted a little bit erratically lately. So, time will tell. In the meantime, we want to call this out.
Fahey says the MELT bill has gained multiple co-sponsors.
In New York, as you know, we are out of session right now. We will not be back until January unless extraordinary circumstances with the Big Beautiful Bill or betrayal bring us back. But at this point, we're just collecting co-sponsors. And we're sure something like this would end up in the courts if we do, if and when we move it.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Welcome back to the Legislative Gazette. Joining me now is Chris Bragg. He is the Albany Bureau Chief at New York Focus. He's done investigative reporting on New York government and politics since 2009, most recently at the Buffalo News and the Albany Times Union. I certainly was a reader of your work at the Times Union, Chris. Welcome to the Legislative Gazette.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First, I want to start with where you're working now, New York Focus, and remind people, if they don't know already, tell them what it is and what you're doing.
New York Focus started about 5 years ago. It's a nonprofit investigative reporting outlet that focuses mainly on state government. So what's going on with the governor and the legislature and people at the state level. Also does some more local reporting on local governments. So it's kind of in the model of like a ProPublica, you know, and the new nonprofit kind of reader and donor supported type of outlet.
Yeah, and it's something we desperately need right now in journalism is investigative journalism. I note that John Oliver on his program actually cited New York Focus for one of the articles your reporter did on gang databases. So a very valuable resource for many, New York Focus. So, Chris, you have this article that we're going to talk about that has to do with the state controller. His name is Tom DiNapoli. I talk to him regularly for this program. And there's always that time of the year where he urges people to reach out to the state. You may have money that you don't know you have for a variety of reasons that the state is holding, and you can get that money. But you looked at what the controller is doing counter to what other states are doing, which is slow rolling the returning of the lost money, not automatically sending it to those whose money it is.
That's right. So first of all, you know, DiNapoli's been in office since 2007, I believe. So he actually has an opponent for the Democratic nomination for controller in 2026, Drew Warshaw. It's his first time having an opponent in the Democratic primary since DiNapoli's been in office. So Warshaw's kind of kicking up some things that generally haven't gotten a lot of attention, just, you know, running for office against DiNapoli. So this is one of the main things that Warshaw is really emphasizing. And so he's sort of keeping this issue in the news and making people pay attention to it. So I started looking at it a little bit more. Other states have had these programs for quite a while where if somebody is owed unclaimed funds, they're automatically sent a check if the amount is under, you know, a certain threshold. So some states it's up to $5,000, where if somebody's owed money, they're just automatically sent a check without them having to do anything. In New York, there's a new law that DiNapoli actually pushed for that allows the controller's office currently to send checks up to $250 to someone without them having to take any action. Next year, DiNapoli can send a check for whatever amount he wants. So there's no threshold at this point. But he's saying basically that he's going to take it that very slow and not just start sending out $5,000 checks or whatever immediately because he's worried about fraud.
Yeah. And yet we see the rate has nearly tripled, according to your article, the amount of money New York owes since he took office in 2007. Do we know why that trend is in place? And why, for example, people have money they need to get returned to them?
So when DiNapoli took office, the amount that was owed to New Yorkers and people even outside the state was about $7 billion. It's now $20 billion. So the interesting thing about that is that when basically at the end of the year, if new people are owed any kind of money, it's basically taken out as a loan by the state legislature, and the state legislature and the governor spend it every year in the state budget. So even though technically, people are owed $20 billion in New York, that money has already been spent. So if suddenly the $20 billion were repaid, that would be a massive IOU that the state would owe. I'm sorry, what was the other part of your question?
Oh, the other part is, give us just a few reasons why people have unclaimed funds.
Sure, something like in an active account, an uncashed check, a security deposit, things like that basically has never made it from something like a bank or utility back to a person. Basically, the controller's office assumes responsibility for paying that back after a certain point.
And am I right about this, Chris Bragg, from New York Focus, that the money will go to the state eventually if nobody claims it?
That's right, yeah. If it goes to the legislature and the governor at a certain point, at the end of the year, if nobody claims it. So it's basically a big IOU that state lawmakers owe to the public indirectly. And if people started claiming it en masse, or if it started being sent to people like under Drew Warshaw's plan in huge chunks, then that would suddenly blow a huge hole in the state budget.
Exactly, exactly. So we see where this program may be slow rolled for a reason.
The idea, number one, that this will get changed, to me, seems like a long shot, about as long a shot of the controller's challenger winning that primary.
Yeah, no. Well, Warshaw did raise actually a decent amount of money in his first few months. So, and there's public matching funds for statewide offices now. So maybe more of a shot than, you know, you would think traditionally. But yes, it's very difficult to defeat an incumbent, especially somebody who's popular like DiNapoli is. But, you know, yeah, like I said, other states are allowing automatic returns in pretty large amounts at this point. So DiNapoli now has the discretion to do that, and more of the money could get out of the door. But then again, there's more and more money accumulating all the time at the controller's office because they've gotten better and better at, you know, getting the money back from banks and other financial institutions. And so New York being the center of kind of finance, the pot of money just keeps growing, you know, faster than they can possibly give it out. So even if, you know, they start giving out automatically to people in checks and larger chunks, it's possible it'll still keep, you know, growing even with that.
Yeah. And you cite in your article Ron Lizzie, who is an unclaimed funds advocate. Talk about getting the addresses, because a lot of these checks end up being returned, undeliverable. There's a problem in and of itself.
Yeah, that's true. So one disadvantage that DiNapoli has in New York is that under state law, the controller's office isn't allowed to access people's tax returns for information about their last known address. So that makes it even more of a challenge to correctly send it to the right address. So, yeah, Ron Lizzie, he's a advocate for just automatically sending checks out to addresses and says that helps prevent fraud. DiNapoli's office is worried that checks could be sent to the wrong address and that could cause fraud. So there is a tension there. And a lot of other states do allow the treasurer controller to obtain information from tax returns, which is, you know, the most reliable recent information about somebody's address. So to my understanding, it's under discussion with some people in the legislature and DiNapoli's office about trying to give the controller's office access to that kind of information. So that could help and maybe encourage DiNapoli to raise the threshold for sending out automatic checks a little bit higher if the controller's office had access to that kind of information going forward.
He is Chris Bragg, Albany Bureau Chief at New York Focus. It's been a pleasure spending a few moments talking about this issue with you, Chris, and I hope we'll get to talk to you again on the Legislative Gazette.
All right, thanks so much.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. On Wednesday, a federal court hearing on a lawsuit involving New York's self-directed home care program was derailed by hackers. The New York Public News Network's Emily Watkins was in that meeting and spoke with an expert afterward. A warning to listeners, this story does discuss racism, anti-Semitism, and sexual harassment.
Except they just got hacked by some big porno thing. Can you believe that?
Federal District Court Judge Frederick Block was stunned after his virtual hearing was invaded by quote-unquote Zoom bombers. Speaking with others in the meeting, he reacted in real time.
I mean, okay, now you got to stay there with me because I don't trust this stuff.
The hearing was to discuss a proposed final settlement in a class action lawsuit against the State Department of Health. Consumers have sued the state for allegedly violating their rights before losing home care during a major change in the state's program. But instead of getting into the issue at hand, just a few minutes into the hearing, a user appeared to take host control of the Zoom meeting, and then three users began playing vulgar videos. The videos depicted men involved in sexual activity, swastikas, KKK emblems, Confederate flags and other offensive images.
I would say that this is probably a moderately sophisticated attack, at least.
Jeremy Blackburn is an associate professor of computer science at Binghamton University.
They must have had management software, some kind of script, something ready to go to play all the videos on different screens concurrently.
Blackburn has studied these types of attacks called quote-unquote Zoom bombing since they first became popular during COVID.
My expertise lies in the large-scale measurement and analysis of kind of jerks online. I usually say online. You know, some people don't like to print that, but that's my expertise. I'm a computer scientist that knows a lot of this type of bad stuff.
Over the past 8 days, a similar attack appears to have derailed an opioid settlement council meeting for the state of Mississippi, a Board of Regents meeting for Western New Mexico University, and an Arkansas Board of Corrections meeting, all held over Zoom. Blackburn says the offensive content shown during the attack is typical of Zoom bombing.
You shouldn't take these type of attacks necessarily at face value.
Blackburn explains these attacks can be ideologically driven, but not always. Often, the attackers take control of the meeting, sometimes by targeting meeting hosts ahead of time with phishing emails. Most often, once in control, they display offensive content to terrorize and upset meeting attendees.
This sounds like something that a bunch of people on 4chan or whatever were just launching an attack that would be very shocking, messing with people. At an extreme, it's much harder. How much more can you mess with people if you take over Zoom call than this? Does that make sense?
Blackburn says these attacks are becoming more common. People should take typical security precautions. Hosts should be aware they might be targeted, and government agencies and departments hit should investigate. But it's hard as an attendee of a Zoom meeting to really avoid these attacks.
I'm going to be honest. I think people kind of are going to need to expect that this is the type of attack that they are, or cybersecurity incident, that they are most likely to be a part of.
We've reached out to the federal court for the Eastern District of New York for comment. I'm Emily Watkins for the New York Public News Network.
Well, if you're wondering where to safely catch and eat fish in New York, there's a website for that. And as the Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine reports, it's all thanks to one lab in Fulton County.
The Hale Creek Field Station near Gloversville used to be a hatchery. Though the hatchery closed in the 1970s, you can still find brown and rainbow trout in the pools on the front lawn. And, if you ask nicely, the station employees might even give you a cup of fish food.
It's like they know I'm here. Look at that, will you? Oh my gosh, that's so awesome.
Inside the station, state-of-the-art machines and Department of Environmental Conservation employees are hard at work. Today, DEC and Department of Health commissioners are offering a tour of the facility that tests fish samples for PCBs, heavy metals, pesticides, and so-called forever chemicals. DEC lab technician Madison Franco demonstrates as State Health Commissioner James McDonald looks on.
This is a largemouth bass. So what we do when we get a fish that's frozen, we first read the tag number. So each of these metal tags that the DEC gives out has like an individual number that can't get repeated. So we know that this is the fish that's associated with this number. Then we first descale the fish. So this one is already done, and you can see because it's so smooth. And then we'll fillet it. So this is a fillet that's already done. All of the like organs and guts really stay, and this gets thrown out. We only want like the fat because that's where all of like the chemicals are.
Yeah, that makes sense, right?
And this is what people would eat. You're not going to be eating the gross parts.
The fillets are then cut into chunks and ground up.
This is genuinely, usually bass blends pretty well. You want it to look like baby food.
The samples are freeze-dried for about a day. Then they get sent upstairs to one of three separate labs. It's lab tech Tanya Jazowitz's job to extract from the samples a vial of contaminants like PCBs and pesticides.
So essentially, it concentrates everything down into like a lipid form, but then there's also like other junk in there, like other organic compounds, other proteins, lipids that might interfere with our analysis. So we essentially have to then take that and clean it up.
The station also tests for PFAS compounds and heavy metals like mercury. For metals, the samples are incinerated for about 10 minutes, leaving just the contaminants. PFAS and other bioaccumulating chemicals are filtered out over 3 days. For DEC Commissioner Amanda Lefton, this field station is a vital part of keeping the state healthy in the face of federal uncertainties.
And during these times in which we're seeing the federal government really pull away from environmental protection, having just recently EPA announcing that they are eliminating the Office of Research and Development, that in fact does really important science much like this, the work and the collaboration between the Department of Health and DEC is more important than ever to make sure that we're protecting the environment, we're continuing to protect public health, and that's where the contrast is very real.
Sample processing can take up to a week. Reports are written and sent to the DOH, the State Department which makes the recommendations on which fish are safe to eat. Commissioner McDonald tells reporters the collaboration between the agencies is invaluable.
Not every fish that you catch in New York is healthy to eat. So if you go to our website, health.ny.gov/fish, we have a state broken down by region. There's information there you can find out, is this fish safe to eat? Are there PCBs in it? Are there forever chemicals? Is there mercury in it? Are there heavy metals in it? Because really, fish is healthy food. I want you to eat healthy food. You know, when I think about being a healthy human being, fish is one of the healthiest foods you can eat. And so really what we're trying to do is make sure when you choose food in New York State that you caught here, you have a healthy option. And the fish you catch, you know whether you can eat it or not. If you can't eat it, you might as well just throw it back, my friends.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Aaron Shallow Levine.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2532. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.